Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Scott Pollack and I'm representing the petitioner Yvonne Christina Wigglesworth. We are appealing a decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals terminating Mrs. Wigglesworth's deportation hearing and in effect upholding the district director of the INS's administrative order of deportation. The issue that we're raising before the court is whether the INS may deport the wife of a United States citizen who has applied for lawful permanent resident status through a statutory provision, 8 U.S.C. section 1255, and whether they may do so without providing her with any hearing whatsoever. There are two points on the chronology that I'd like to focus on in the beginning of my argument. Those are when she last arrived in the United States on July 14, 1990. At that point, she came on an airplane to O'Hare Airport. She presented herself for inspection in front of an immigration officer. She was permitted to enter the United States. The reason that I think that that's critical is that based on over 100 years of Supreme Court jurisprudence, the fact that she entered the United States means that she should be granted all due process ordinarily, having entered the U.S. Most recently in the Supreme Court's decision in Zadvydas v. Davis, the Supreme Court stated that persons who have entered the United States are entitled to due process whether their presence in the United States is lawful or unlawful, temporary or permanent. That's true, and I will be addressing that directly, Your Honor, in my argument. The second point on the chronology that I'd like to focus on is the point at which she applied for her permanent resident status through her marriage to a United States citizen, Charles or Chuck Wigglesworth. She had been married to him for about a decade. They had a daughter together. She had been living in the United States. She called this her home since 1980. She applied for adjustment of status, and she was doing so under the Immigration and Nationality Act, a provision which specifically allowed her to. Now, the question of the waiver. When she came in 1990, she did come in under a visa waiver pilot program, and that program was intended to facilitate the expedited entry of visitors to the United States to encourage tourism for people who had very little, if any, ties to the United States. Excuse me, my attention was distracted. The provision of the Immigration Act in which she arrived, okay, I'll wait. I assume he'll give me an additional 30 seconds. All right, thank you. The provision under which she entered, this visa waiver pilot program, it's contained at 8 U.S.C. section 1187. And in order for someone to come in to the United States without a visa, which is usually a requirement to come to the United States, you're supposed to execute certain forms and declare that you are waiving your right to contest deportability on any basis other than asylum. So Ms. Wigglesworth, as a citizen of Sweden, was entitled to attempt an entry to the United States or admission to the United States without a visa. This visa waiver program, there's a list of countries. They're mostly from Europe, and they're considered low-fraud countries. There's this give and take. We would prefer to provide for easy tourism rather than clogging up the consulates abroad, having to determine whether to issue visas in every case. So presumably she did execute forms in which she, the forms themselves would have said that she was waiving her right to a hearing in front of an immigration judge. It wasn't explicit in the hearing itself. There was some testimony as to whether she understood what she was doing when she came in on the visa waiver program.
I just want to be sure that I understand that she did not, it was not part of her claim before the immigration judge that she had never signed anything before.
That was not part of the claim, no.
The reason I ask this is because your brief says, well, the signed forms aren't in the record.
That's right.
Had she made it,
there is disputed testimony in which she said that she had no idea that she was waiving her right to a hearing. Excuse me? I wouldn't concede the point at this juncture. I really think that the Immigration Service, in order to prevail on the claim that she waived her right to any hearing, would have to present those forms, because we don't know whether the forms were clear. We don't know whether the forms clearly informed her of the waiver. And we... The forms themselves have changed over the years, is my understanding, and they may have changed owing to a recognition that the previous forms were not sufficiently, they weren't adequate to provide notice. But again, it's not part of the record, and so I can't make... It's not public? All right. I still think that the Immigration Service needs to provide evidence if they're saying that she certainly did waive. There are actually two reasons why she did not, why the waiver under the visa waiver program, waiver of the hearing, should not apply here. That's correct. And our secondary point is that she did not understand that she was waiving the right to a hearing. To the contrary, she believed that in coming into the United States legally and obtaining the I-94 arrival document, that she was documenting herself in order to make an application and receive a hearing on her right to remain in the United States. That's what was in her mind, because she had been advised by a notary public agency or some immigration services agency that she should leave the United States and come back, and therefore she'd be able to apply for her permanent resident status. So that's what was in her mind. The other reason that the waiver should not apply is that Congress itself did not intend to apply the provisions of the visa waiver or the restrictions of the visa waiver program to immediate relatives of United States citizens who apply for adjustment of status. Why do I say that? The visa waiver pilot program under INA Section 217, 8 U.S.C. 1187, says specifically that you are waiving your right to contest deportability on any basis other than asylum. It means essentially you don't get a hearing unless you're asking for political asylum. No other basis for staying in the United States. However, under Section 245 of the Immigration Act, Congress has specifically permitted immediate relatives of U.S. citizens to apply and therefore to obtain a hearing. The Attorney General's regulations state if you are an applicant for adjustment of status, you and your case is denied, you shall have the right to renew such application in deportation proceedings. The Board of Immigration Appeals and the immigration judge and the Immigration Service, in its presentation to the court, completely ignores the effect of Congress's making this exception, which is clearly at odds with their broad interpretation of the visa waiver pilot waiver of a hearing. So we have... Yes, Your Honor, there is an issue as to her eligibility for adjustment of status. She would be eligible for two reliefs, adjustment or suspension. There's been no final hearing, and our point is she should be entitled to a hearing, that Congress provided for such a hearing, and that because and that the visa waiver, the waiver of the hearing under the visa waiver pilot program does not apply to immediate relatives of U.S. citizens who apply for adjustment of status. I see my time is up. If you have additional, I have reserved 2 minutes rebuttal time, so thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Carl McIntyre, and I represent the INS in this case. I'd like to address two particular points. First, with regard to jurisdiction, to answer the specific question of the record and the I-94W, the Visa Waiver Pilot Program form, it's clear that there are two avenues of process which went forward in this case. One is through the DD, the District Director of the INS. That is where the adjudication of Visa Waiver Pilot Program deportation is done, not through the IJ and the BIA. So in these two separate tracks, a person who is found to be deportable under by the DD would then attempt to go into a district court, and we would then argue that the statute says that that person cannot contest deportability, and we would raise our jurisdictional arguments there. But I'm raising all of this to say that if anything is true, the person, the alien, did not have a right to have review in this court. What happened here was a termination of proceedings, which is not even a final order of deportation. It was a termination of proceedings, and under the law at the time in 1993 and Section 106C of the INA, it states that there is jurisdiction in the courts of appeals over final orders of deportation from actions brought under Section 242B. This was not a 242B action. This was an action under Section 217 because it was a visa waiver pilot program case. This the adjustment of status application was denied by the DD, and contrary to what the plaintiff's counsel has suggested, Your Honors, the one or two exceptions directly in Section 217, there's an exception if a case goes forward for asylum. Then it goes through the normal proceedings. And with regard to adjustment of status, what happens is the INS gives a separate determination by a district director, not in deportation proceedings, not in 242 proceedings, but in separate proceedings, in order to ensure the integrity of the Visa Waiver Pilot Program, which is meant to be used by tourists and therefore meant to be a expedited program to get people in and out of the country. And therefore, if a person comes, is an immediate relative, they're able to have a hearing before a DD. But one of the reasons why that's not relevant here is there's no question that he was not eligible for adjustment. He's got adjustment, his adjustment claim denied. The question here is some type of due process right to suspension of deportation. Suspension of deportation is clearly not one of the things that the VWPP allows.
Your Honor.
Yes. Yes.
It doesn't seem that either the view is clear by the board or that the INS seems at all anxious to enforce this expedited
program. Well, the INS. They tried to act in an expedited day, and the record shows that. What happened was I'm trying to go back to what the INS did to try to act in an expedited way, and that is that the INS took the person into custody, and the alien went into district court to get a stay of that order. That's the only reason that the INS did not deport the alien at that time. They tried to get rid of this case under the expedited procedures under the visa waiver program. What was protracted was the termination proceedings under the accidental proceedings that were started under the other track, which was the determination that these proceedings were improper, and the IJ made that decision, and it was just what happens with many cases. Yes, and I again say that the INS tried to move expeditiously, put the person, issued the actual warrant of deportation. Both the INS, yes. But what I'm trying to state is that the INS tried to move forth with the VWPP. And what happens in Executive Office of Immigration Review proceedings sometimes happens in many cases irregardless of their nature. And the accident of this case being put in these other proceedings. I'm not trying to say that accident was the reason for it taking so long. What I'm saying is there has been an admitted backlog in the BIA of a number of cases, and that is trying to be resolved, and that doesn't have anything, I do not believe, directly do with the nature of this case, but just with the backlog that the BIA had in general with its caseload. The reason it's not in the record is because this record is a record of accidental proceedings with regard to deportation. If the proper mode to if this case had come up in the district court, what would happen is the alien was duty-bound to appeal from the DD's 1993 order of deportation by the DD. And it would have been that track, the district director of the INS. No, district director of the INS. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Of the district director of the INS. And it would have been in proceedings directly appealed from that decision were a determination with regard to the waiver form would have been germane. These were proceedings started by accident because the person that issued the charging document, the INS, did not realize the person was a visa waiver applicant. They thought it was a tourist visa applicant, somebody who went through the normal procedures. And so visa waiver, in other words, and there. Yes, and what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that in order to appeal from the appropriate decision she would have had to appeal from the district director's decision. And it would have been on an appeal from that in the district court where those issues would have come up. Since this came up, since these proceedings were before the Executive Office of Immigration Review, it was a determination of whether to proceed with normal type of 242B proceedings, which do not encompass VWPP. Therefore, there is no record of a VWPP. Yes, but Your Honor, yes, it is, Your Honor. But the reason it's not an issue is because she did not appeal from that. She did not appeal from the district director's order. In other words, what happened here was, I see that my time is running. Can I finish? Yes. What happened here was that the IJ and the BIA terminated proceedings accidentally and improvidently begun. And therefore, the appropriate avenue to take would have been to appeal that district director's 1993 decision to the district court in an exploration of those issues, where we would have again argued, like we would here, that the alien waived her right to contest. But at least in the development of that record before the district court, that's where the VWPP form would come up. I could get you a copy of the form if you want to see a generic form here. I'm not saying that I can't, Your Honor, but I thought your question was to the generic form. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. She entered both times under a visitor's visa. There's a jargon for that type of visa. But she had obtained the visas at U.S. consulates abroad, and she presented herself. She then boarded an airplane, presented herself at O'Hare Airport, and showed her passport and visa to an immigration inspector who allowed her to enter.
In
80 and again in 82. Yes. Now, do you have other specific questions, or okay? First, I disagree that this is not properly before this court. Counsel may refer to these 242 proceedings as having been improvidently begun, or accidental, but they are what they are. Whether the INS made a mistake in initiating them, this is a final order from the Board of Immigration Appeals upholding the judge to terminate the deportation proceedings. It gives final effect.
That's exactly your problem. The only thing that happened was the deportation proceedings were terminated, and not only that, the alien is a victim in the case in which the deportation proceedings terminated.
Not in this case, Your Honor, because it gave final administrative effect to the so-called administrative deportation order.
That was something that could have been reviewed judicially back in 1993. Why is it reviewable now?
The Mrs. Wigglesworth was asserting certain rights under the Immigration Act in deportation proceedings. Upon the judge's decision, her only avenue in order to exhaust her administrative remedies at that point would have been, and what she did was she appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals. And they didn't, as you pointed out, they didn't render their decision for some 8 years. I see that my time is up. Just one last point. We did point out in our jurisdictional statement of the opening brief that if jurisdiction is found to be more properly in the district court, we requested that the case be transferred there. But I don't think that that's necessary under the facts of this case.
Okay.